Say hi to spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 4/29, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.
This is Golden State of Mindcast. Ivan, as usual, joined by Bram and Nate. We're already having a chuckle pre-recording. We haven't talked in a good old long while, and a lot has happened in Dub Nation since we last recorded. KD went down with injury. We've got Matt Barnes on the roster again. We've got the Andrew Bogut saga to Cleveland and then injury. Jose Calderon that could have been and never was. Two-game losing streak. Gosh, I don't even know what else. We've got Bram absolutely savaging the Knicks in a post on GoldenStateOfMind.com.
Wonderful.
I enjoyed that article. I really had a blast writing that one. It was cathartic. Like, I have to live in New York, or I do live in New York, I guess, by choice, because I'm a free man in this, at least for now.
Let's skip that. You told me the other day, Bram, that you listen to New York talk radio. Like, why do you do that to yourself?
So, I'm sorry. That was a...
I'm trying to get this back on the rail really quickly, but it doesn't sound like it's going to happen.
We're just so excited because we haven't for some reason we haven't actually recorded a podcast in like 2 or 3 weeks. So we're giddy with the anticipation, and we've been unable to corral ourselves so far in the minute and a half into this podcast. But yes, so I live in New York by choice, and I am a fan of sports, and the news has been particularly depressing, and so I listen to a lot of sports radio. It's like it's either sports radio or just like the classical station. And sometimes the classical station plays good stuff, but really only late at night. And so if you're listening in like the drive time hours, it's just like the blandest, most boring, like only Handel and, well, Beethoven can be good, but like just like bad, just it's not stuff you necessarily want to listen to. And for whatever reason, and this is a total aside and really shouldn't be recorded, but I'm going to keep it in it, is that WKCR is like the station that comes out of Columbia, and during the drive time hours, they only play really messed up free jazz. And like, as somebody who plays free jazz, there's some free jazz that's cool, and there's some that just like shouldn't ever be listened to, and that's the stuff that they play. And only when people, they know people are sitting in traffic, and I think it's like the biggest con of all time.
Why would they punish people? Well, maybe they're punishing people because they're sitting there listening to terrestrial radio instead of podcasts, which we're recording one right now.
Right.
So, like,
they should
why
be listening to podcasts. Really? Okay. But so to double back is that I listen to way too much talk radio, and I absorb way too much anger and fear, because that's basically what New York City sports radio is just one big, like, if you took all of the fear in your heart and poured it into a bucket and then like lit it on fire and poured it out on Fifth Avenue.
So I've only listened to a little New York sports talk radio. Have you listened to DC sports talk radio?
No, not so much.
Season?
No.
Oh man.
But I have been going to Philly recently for work, and I have listened to a good amount of Philly radio, and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Washington football's fans are, woof, those guys. And they get really upset. I mean, I was there like, you know, I actually will not date myself. Never mind. Go ahead.
I just want to point out that within the first 3 minutes, we somehow ended up talking about the Redskins, or the team that shall not be named.
You already named it, dude.
And I wanted to, I mean, I'm tempted to start talking about Cousins, Kirk Cousins, not DeMarcus Cousins, potentially on the Niners, but we're not
going to go there.
All right,
so way back.
I've been trying to wean off of the 49ers, so we're not even going to talk about them.
They don't exist.
The 49ers are in a much worse place than the team in D.C. We'll just leave it at that.
Yes.
And they're also in a much
worse
place
than Kings.
Much worse place than the Golden State Warriors, who just finished
a
five-game road trip.
There we go.
Last night was their final game of
but they're going
that
out
East
again.
Coast
I mean, it's
swing.
Not.
It's well, like that's a, over. That's true, but it's not. They're heading to Minnesota in after a, after one game at home, I believe. Yeah. But at least the East Coast road trip is over. They finished a meager 3-2 on the trip, which a lot has been made of the two game losing streak. But actually, when you look at 3-2 as a road trip, is actually we haven't seen that in a few years.
It's actually quite normal.
Well, yes, it's exactly. It is normal. Like the way that our team has looked, the Golden State Warriors have looked in the last couple of weeks, really since the All-Star break, I think they've kind of looked normal.
Yeah.
And that's unfamiliar to us for the last, you know, whatever it's been, 26 months or something like
that. Well, so the obvious thing here is the KD injury, which we haven't addressed yet, which has sort of, that ship has sailed, so to speak, as far as like this being any sort of, I don't know. Maybe we could come up with something interesting to say about it. I was going to say the ship has sailed about us adding anything to the conversation, but the fact is that Durant is hurt for the foreseeable future. We did actually have some inside information I saw on Slack that he's doing well. I'll just leave it at that. I saw that he's doing well. So that's good news, and that he definitely is going to be back for the playoffs. But the fact that he's out, the fact that his getting injured coincided with this really intense East Coast swing, this really intense road trip, which was the longest road trip that the Warriors will have to experience this year. Also coupled with Curry and Klay basically going totally cold from the field. I think it was a little bit of a perfect storm as far as the team being vulnerable. And yet again, they walked away from it being 3-2. They did lose two in a row for the first time in the regular season since two years ago. And then Nate made the horrible mistake of trying to make a joke that people don't understand. And I'll let you explain what you did.
There's no explanation. It was just a dumb joke. I woke up in the morning. I wrote a game thread. Game threads, I usually write like three lines. This time I just felt punchy. I wrote like two paragraphs and whatever. I mean,
right. But the point was, like, I didn't even read what the paragraphs that you wrote.
The headline said they haven't lost a game. I mean, yes.
Since, they haven't lost, what was it?
November
say it out
2013.
Loud.
To make three the games point in that a Michael row. Jordan, a real man, didn't lose a game from like 1990 to 98, two, three in a row.
But Nate, the ceiling is the roof, man.
The ceiling is the roof.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
I don't even know what you guys are talking about anymore, but if we wanted to kind of bring back the Kevin Durant injury into it a little bit and talking about why Steph and Klay have been in such a dry stretch. Like, I mean, I think that there's probably not one thing that that we can point at. Clearly, losing KD is going to affect your offense quite a bit. But is there anything else? Like, do you guys have any hot takes on this? Like, what is it? Is it Steve Kerr? Is he not using them right now? And it's finally kind of like falling in on us.
Wait, are you going full fire Kerr on us?
Has this
been a brewing thing with you? Just like the Harrison Barnes thing was with Nate.
Shout out to Killjoy. I don't Killjoy on Twitter is the main fire Kerr guy. I'm not obviously it's ridiculous, but it is super funny. I actually kind of enjoy it.
It's really funny.
But I think it's funny to him too. It's not like it's a thing.
Well, yeah, right. And
he's not showing up at the games like, you know, picking and saying fire Kerr. It's just funny.
There is the legit criticism though, and it's not about him being a terrible coach, but the idea that he still isn't putting Steph into pick and rolls to the degree that a lot of fans would like to see, and he's very much sticking to the motion offense.
Yeah, they're sticking to the thing that won them almost two championships in a row.
Right, but the almost is the word that people catch up on a little
but
bit.
But won them one and then won them almost the second and got them 73 wins. Like, I'm okay with that. Like, I'm not...
3-1, Bram. 3-1. Come on.
Kill myself. Fire the man. Jesus Christ.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, these have been early games, so to be quite honest, it's hard for me to get home and see the losses. I think I saw like the second half of the Wizards game, and then what was the other one again?
The Chicago Bulls.
Chicago, yeah, I missed most of the Chicago game. So
I applaud your honesty.
Yeah, I'm being honest about that. So I'm missing those two. It's hard for me to really comment too much.
Well, you just knew that they were schedule losses. Just, you know, chalked them up to fate and just walked away.
Right, there you go. But I think it's hard. You know, this is going to sound like Charles Barkley-ism a little bit.
Uh-oh.
But shooters tend to go through slumps. It happens. It happens almost every year. What we saw last year, or really most of the last 2 years from Curry, is a shooter who really didn't go through a slump. So I have a really hard time reading too much into this, except for the fact that we're just not – Curry is still, like, having an otherworldly year. It's just not quite as good as last year because last year was, like, ridiculous. So I don't know. I'm not reading too much into it. Klay Thompson, every year, Klay Thompson has a slump. And every year this question comes up, like, is something wrong with Klay Thompson? Is he really that good? Maybe he just sucks. Maybe we should have traded him for credit. I mean, you can go on and on, but if we're having the conversations over and over again, I just don't know how much we can read into it.
Well, and the one thing that I've sort of taken away from it is my gut reaction was like, well, thank God it's happening now.
Right.
You know, like if they always go through it and there always is some slump, like it's a little uncharacteristic. I think it's the trifecta. It's uncharacteristic that they both are in a slump at the same time, plus KD's injury, right? So like, but at the same time, if the worst thing that happens is they lose two games in a row, it's like, oh, woe is us. Like, oh, this is tough. Seriously. Like, this is unacceptable. Fire Kerr, you know, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. But the thing is, I think that we're far enough out. Like, luckily the KD injury happened a month plus from month and a half from when the playoffs start, which is his exact recovery time. And luckily these slumps are happening, you know, a month plus from playoff time, which obviously by the time that they get into it, they've proven time and time again and year after year that they're such transcendent shooters that they'll shoot themselves out of a slump, you know? And again, it's unfortunate that it's happening at the same time, but honestly, I could not, in the grand scheme of things, I don't care.
The one thing that is interesting, I saw someone tweet this, and it's sort of interesting, is that, you know, usually if you see Curry miss, it's like they're rimming out or they're like just a little long. These shots have been a little more off than we're used to seeing from Curry.
So then they'll be more on when he comes back, man. You know, the pendulum swings both ways, my friend.
I love that response. That's a great response. And I guess what I was going to say, like any explanation we give for that is purely speculation. We can sit here and analyze his mechanics and compare them to the past year, but I just don't know if there's anything we can say tangibly that would explain a shooting slump from Curry and Thompson at the same time.
I think, and honestly, this is like total hot take, dumb thing.
That's what I want.
You need a headline. Let's go.
You guys are so into this. Oh my Lord. Wow. You just were like all in, you know, I could say anything. I could just like go on about the,
oh God, what have we encouraged? What have we become?
No, it's like not even that big of a hot take. I think that both Curry and Clay were getting back to like, well, all right, with KD out now, we both of us have to carry the offensive, the weight of the offense. And it's the type of thing where I think that they've been like purposely trying to feed KD and like really make him feel like he's one of them and really make KD feel like he belongs and make his, you know, and that's why you see KD like topping the averages for the team and rebounds as well as points, as well as all these different things that he's doing. And I think that they've been like not force feeding him, but just definitely like deferring to him with the understanding that KD at peak form obviously makes the team better, unlike Harrison Barnes. And to that end, then both of them having to then switch that that sort of thinking in their minds and be like, okay, we need to, you know, Steph all of a sudden being like, I need to be the transcendent fireballer that I was last year. Like, you can't just decide to do that. It has to be in the flow and the rhythm of your body and the rhythm of the season and the rhythm of like how you're getting up your shots and everything. And I think that, you know, that would be my guess, is that maybe with him going down, they both sort of tried to, they both, you know, and it's a human reaction, just like they're forcing it. And, you know, it's actually not a hot take.
No, I think you're right. I think it's not a hot take at all. It's totally reasonable. But I still can't help.
Stay
but
tuned
one.
For the hot take in about 5 minutes, though.
Oh, you need to crack open another one, and then we're gonna get there. So I
will say I cracked it open ahead of time, so I wasn't unprofessional and made the like cracking sound on the mic. So no, don't worry about that.
Do you, man?
Yeah, no, I always do.
Okay.
And this is a little bit of a devil's advocate, as I often play in this scenario, but the idea that Kerr has not put Steph into a pick and roll still is interesting, because like what you're saying there, Durant goes out and their motion offense this year has been so much involved with like, you know, where each of those three players is going to be, and they all have their kind of roles, and a lot of times when it breaks down, they rely on Durant to bail them out a little bit, right? He's kind of that you know, that at the end of the day, he's the guy who's going to give you a really good chance one-on-one to just go ahead and score. Nobody can really stop. But in the absence of Durant and in their kind of relying on that system with him in there, they just don't really feel as fine-tuned. There's a lot more possessions that are kind of just going awry when the, you know, some of the actions don't work, and maybe they're not working because they're fatigued, which really could be the answer to all of this. You know, they're coming off screens and they're not getting as open as they used to be. And then in the end, like they don't have a good shot. They don't create the shot that they want to create. And I think a lot of the people that have been calling for Kerr to put Steph in the high pick and roll more, in part are looking at it like, we need practice there. Like, he needs to be comfortable in that situation. The offense needs to be comfortable in that situation for when you do need to have that, get that bucket. When everything else kind of fails, like, you know, are they good enough in those scenarios right now where they can just kind of rely on that and rely on the comfort of just an easy pick and roll and, you know, Steph, you know, maybe pulling himself out of a slump because the standard offense isn't getting him the shots that he usually would get, right? Like, is there anything to that, or is that just like,
because I think you're
totally right that like they're great with the offense that they have. It doesn't really make that much sense to change the offense. But is there room to kind of add that like fallback piece a little bit?
I think definitely, and it's also something that we saw in the finals last year. I mean, if they would have sort of dumbed it down, for lack of a better phrase, and simplified things, and if Steph wouldn't have, for example, thrown that behind the back pass, and if like a couple other things would have happened, I think that they would have won any of games 5, 6, and 7. And it came down to execution and to executing their offense, and you know, in each game, they felt, to me, it always felt like they were a little bit too slick. And there's part of me that I think that as they go into the playoffs, like, I think that they've all learned enough and they've all been hardened enough, and not like in the James way, like actually hardened by like life. And as by, you know, dealing with these stupid ass 3-1 memes, for example, and the, you know, the Draymond dick punching talk, that it's the type of thing that all they want to do is win. And so I think that like Kerr and Jaren Collins and Ron Adams and players and Kevin Durant, like, you know, nobody's a spring chicken here. Nobody's coming into this wide-eyed, and even somebody like McCaw is playing above his pay grade and above his sort of, you know, seeming mentality, or, you know, coming out early out of UNLV. And it's the type of thing where I'm not sure if that like necessarily means that they're going to start running pick and rolls, but I do think that this team has seen a lot. You know, they're sort of like American citizens at this point, just sort of like witnessing an unending series of confounding situations, and that they're able to then, hopefully, in the same way that we all can, bond together and do the right thing.
I hope you're right. I still think that I don't really think this again, but the idea that Kerr as being cute, I think is still a thing that is going to persist until they go to or but also, have a vanilla fallback, right?
Right. But what if he is being cute to obfuscate the truth of the fact that they're actually just running like crazy amount of pick and rolls in practice when nobody's
yeah.
there? That's my theory. I think that like they think that they can hold on to the number one seed no matter even though KD is out. I think if San Antonio, which I'm totally petrified of San Antonio, by the way. I was like watching that San Antonio Houston game last night and it was crazy watching Kawhi.
They keep winning these close games and it's driving me
insane.
Dude,
he hit a 3-point shot to put them up by two, and then on when Harden and the James variety of Harden when he drove down the court, Kawhi came from behind and blocked it out of nowhere to seal the game. And then in a gaggle of dudes got the rebound. It was just like he did three things that sealed the game. And it was just him. I mean, like it didn't really matter who else was on the court. It was terrifying. So,
and then the NBA tested him for PEDs after the game, which was really funny. So a lot of good discussion topics out of that. One is MVP, which maybe we'll have time to get to later.
I say Kawhi. Yeah, I'm all in on Kawhi for MVP. Later, mostly just because I hate Russ and Harden, but that's fine.
This is what you have to look forward to, listeners. If you want to listen to the end of the podcast, we're going to talk about that hate. So first of all, we've talked
Don't
a lot
hold
about,
me back,
about
Ivan.
We've talked a lot about Steph and Clay's struggles. I will note, because I don't, we should make mention of this, that Steph did have a better shooting night last night, went 6 yes. for 15 from the arc, started to look like maybe he was pulling himself out of it. Clay, definitely not. He was just kind of awful. Like, that's the other thing about Steph is doing a lot of good things. Like, he hasn't been hitting from the arc, but he's playing so well otherwise. They're getting like really making an effort to get to the rim. He has been a little tentative from the arc, I think, in being unsure about that shot at the moment, but it has resulted in him kind of doing more, driving. Clay just kind of has, like, when he has these scuffles from as a shooter, he kind of scuffles. He has like a full brain scuffle. Right, like he throws balls out of bounds. He like makes bad defensive rotations. He like puts his hands on his head and like doesn't know what's going on. It's really funny, and I hope that he comes out of it soon. The other thing that you brought up though is McCaw playing kind of beyond his means. And he had a big night last night. He was one of the two guys between him and Andre Iguodala who really stepped up to add some offense where they were missing it, and hit three of four, I think, from the 3-point line. Nate, we don't want to have Bram dominate this anymore. What are you thinking about from McCaw? Like as he's developed, because I have some opinions that probably wouldn't be very popular among the McCaw fans, but I would love to hear your take on him so far.
Well, I mean, as a future Hall of Famer, I mean, this is kind of the trajectory I would expect to be on. I think, what's always surprised me about McCaw, and actually I do want to get back to Clay too, because there are some things I've noticed in Clay, but McCaw's ball skills are much better than I thought they were coming in. Like, I think I really imagine him like in the first year really being strictly a defender, but his like feel for the game on offense and his ball skills are really, I mean, really way ahead of where you'd expect for a second round rookie. I'm like really impressed. And I think in the beginning it was clear that he just was not, it was clear that he was either both not in sync and not looking for his own offense very much. And I think what we're seeing right now is he's just found his spaces within their offensive scheme where he feels comfortable looking for his own shot. And I think that's as much as anything else. And Apricot wrote, an Explain One Play about this, about the last game, which was obviously an outstanding explanation of why McCaw is getting there. But, I think McCaw is probably – he's not going to make anyone's all-rookie team, But I'd have to say he's one of the most surprising rookies of this year in terms of where people imagine him being, where he is. Like, he's well beyond where I imagine, just in terms of his ability to even, like, even putting the ball in his hands, being able to run the offense. He's impressive. And I think we're just, at this point, I'm not sure how he's way ahead of where I thought. And so I'm wondering, like, how much more can we get out of this guy? How close is he to a ceiling? And, but the really nice thing is with Kevin Durant out, he's going to get a lot more run. And I love that. And I think what we're seeing now is him getting those opportunities and feeling a little bit more free to do what he wants.
Well, so here's, go ahead, Brandon.
I was just talking about this with somebody on Twitter today, is that I think that, and, you know, obviously you never, wish injury on anybody, but the way that this specific injury happened, and again, like I was saying earlier, with the timeline, with everything, you know, being hopefully he's coming back for the playoffs, I think that the KD injury actually kickstarts two things, and that is A, McCaw's development, and sort of him being like fed to the fire and really seeing what he can do. And so far he's been, like I said, exceeding expectations and truly playing out of his mind. And just like, you know, if his one fault is being too tentative, but that he can't actually shoot, like once, as we saw last night, which Apricot wrote about, like once he starts actually shooting and hitting those shots, when he has the open shot, which again, sidetrack, like when Ivan and I were watching the Knicks game at Finity's the other night, you know, there were multiple times where he just had like a beautiful open shot and we're just screaming at the screen, like, shoot it off, shoot it. You know, and he didn't, he passed it off and it was bad. But I think that like, if he starts trusting himself to make that shot, then that becomes, you know, then it's another steal that the Warriors have made in the second round. And also, again, side note, is that I actually, I was talking to Mike Prada like earlier in the year about Rookie of the Year votes, and I was kind of joking that I thought that McCaw would actually get some votes because I thought that the Warriors would have so many blowouts that he would play a bunch. I didn't necessarily foresee that would take a Kevin Durant injury to make that happen, but I am glad that at least there is a backup plan and that it's not like they drafted McCaw to replace Durant in the case that he got hurt, but the fact that he has played so well and the fact that Durant is hurt, whether or not, you know, you want to believe it or not or whatever, like that is something that now McCaw has this opportunity and seems like he's poised to really take full advantage of it. And point B, getting back to the beginning, is that I think that the one thing that this will also create is that the Warriors are not complacent at all heading into the postseason, because nothing is given to them. Like the number one seed is not theirs automatically. You know, you see a surging Spurs, you see a bunch of teams that are coming for their throne that's not even theirs anymore because it's the Cavaliers. And I think the combination of the 3-1 thing that happened last year and the combination of like losing in such heartbreaking manner, plus the KD injury and the shooting slump, I think that they're going to be on edge and they're going to be like hardwired and they're going to be just like ready for blood as the playoffs start, which I'm not sure if that was the case last year. And I'm not sure if, you know, there's no way to say that like that caused the injury to Steph. I mean, it was a freak accident. He slipped on some sweat. Like, you can't game plan for that. But I do think that it's an extremely different situation heading into the playoffs this year, whereas the year before they were the defending champs. They were 73-9. They had the seeming, you know, like Marcus Thompson, you know, who is I think one of the best basketball writers in all of the anywhere, like anybody,
the world.
Yeah. But he wrote a thing like, you know, he legitimately was asking if the Warriors could run the table and go undefeated in the playoffs. And that was a legitimate thought. That wasn't him at all being arrogant. That wasn't anything. But I think that it's an extremely different situation heading into this playoffs, in that we know that players can get injured. We've seen it with KD. We saw it with Steph last year. And we know that nothing is guaranteed. You know, going 73-9 again, like, does not guarantee anything. And if anything, it it commits you to a potential life of endless misery and fear, where people just jump in your Twitter handles and make fun of you for no reason. And to that, I say, please stop.
I just to finish on McCaw, because I do have my other opinion here that again is kind of maybe I'm a victim of my faux expectations. Like, it is really fun to talk about McCaw as like rookie of the year candidate and like joking about, you know, future Hall of Famer and whatnot, but he for somebody who looks so smart about basketball, like, he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He's in the right place, like, very often, like all the time, like defensively and offensively, he's moving into the right places and generally making pretty good decisions. But it's that, not even just tentativeness, but I kind of feel like his, like, there's something about how he plays that like masks how ineffective he actually has been for most of the season, which is he'll often, you know, he'll get the ball, he'll pump fake instead of shooting when a shot has been created for him. Like, that has, that, like Bram said, that, like, we were yelling about that, drives me crazy. But then he drives in and he takes like three steps and then doesn't really create anything else, right? He doesn't really do anything other than take time off the clock and then pass it back out. And then it kind of resets the whole thing, right? And
hater. Like,
it doesn't hater. Really feel like he's being an effective cog in their offense.
Future Hall of Famer?
He needs to take that shot. And if he doesn't take that shot, he needs to drive and get fouled. He needs to create something for somebody else. But he just passes it back and then just like kind of goes back into the corner.
If you could envision an old woman sitting. I'm sorry. Yeah, like an old woman sitting on a porch, just like looking at you with a cane in her hand, just like with pure hatred and disapproval.
I'm on somebody's lawn for sure. Yeah.
You're on somebody's lawn.
Am I on your lawn?
You might be on my lawn. I think me and Brant might have a shared lawn on this one, though. So
I feel like, unfortunately, Nate and I have a shared lawn in most situations.
I just want him to be. I just want him to be what we think he should be already. Like, he's so close. Just shoot the damn ball. Like,
wait. So are you saying that you're impatient and untrustworthy of a guaranteed future of success?
Oh, I trust. It's guaranteed. I'm not really worried about that. I am impatient, I suppose. I don't remember if we were joking about this the other day, but like, it's almost like Iguodala has taken him too much under his wing. Like, he plays like Iguodala, which is great. Like, I love Andre Iguodala. He's one of my favorite players. But that, like, that kind of mentality of like, I'm going to be this kind of glue guy that isn't going to take the shot until it's really necessary.
So do you think that his peak ceiling is higher than Iguodala's?
No.
All right. So then he should play like Iguodala.
Yeah, but it's so frustrating sometimes. Just shoot the ball.
I think what Ivan's saying is that he's playing like Iguodala now, which is a lot less aggressive than Iguodala, like with his Sixers.
Right, but his outside shot is already better than Iguodala's ever was, even back in the day. You know, I mean, he's a lot less aggressive. I agree with that, but like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, he has the potential to be a better shooter, not as good of a defensive player, even though he's got really good defensive fundamentals. But I don't think he'll ever have the body and the athleticism.
You know what, Sam? I was just about to say the only reason that is separating them is their biceps.
Well, it's not just that, right? It's the whole weight. I mean, he really just gets he cannot hold any ground when somebody drives on him. He's able to get in front of people, like, that's not a problem. But like,
yeah, I mean, Iguodala was a stronger player coming in. I mean, yeah, there's no question about he was a better athlete coming in than.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So I mean,
he was a number seven. He was number seven draft pick and a star in college.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's a tough comparison in a way, because you're comparing Iguodala. I mean, what I hear is you're making the comparison to Iguodala at the end of his career, which is just a different thing. But
what I hear is I'm generally against throwing slander at my boy McCaw.
Be off interactions.
This is the other thing that I was the comparison that I was making the other day was to Darrell Wright, Which at some point was the low bar for Harrison Barnes. I just want to say, like, Golden State of Mind.
Oh, that was my high bar for Harrison.
That was actually, I remember that. That was like a reasonable expectation for him.
Yeah, that's really good call.
Whereas, you know, some people, I may have even said this myself, had his high bar as Paul Pierce, which is another story that has been very entertaining recently. But it's that degree of tentativeness and that degree of like not quite effective, because he doesn't shoot when the shot is created, and then he doesn't create anything after not shooting. And
I just can't agree with that. And it's not like he's,
man, you haven't even been watching these games, Nate. Come on.
I said there are two games I didn't watch. They happen to be losses. So it's about me, really. You know, he's not like, you know, we're not looking at Magic Johnson out there by any stretch of the imagination, but I mean, he can get into creases and he can put balls in places a lot of rookies wouldn't even dare try. And I think that's,
phrasing.
Oh God, Jesus. Come on, man. I work with adolescents all day. Don't start. So that means I should be more mindful.
Well,
I think his instincts are there. I think it's just a matter of figuring out what he's capable of executing and when to take advantage of those things. Because I've seen him a number of times, and sometimes, like, early in the year, they were just turnovers. He would just, like, he would see a guy flash and get open, and he would just pass the ball, like, a second too late. And so I think what we've seen is that we've seen kind of him over-adjust a little bit to kind of being a little bit more passive. And I think now we're kind of seeing him figure out where his sweet spot is. And I think we have, you know, this time without KD to really evaluate what Patrick McCall might look like next year, not by the end of his Hall of Fame career. But I think that's really, I'm going to take this next month without KD as the real barometer of what I think about him.
All right, so here's a question. Do you think Pat McCall is actually, like, his ceiling is a much higher version of a young Matt Barnes, actually?
I would say it's higher than that.
No, I think it is. I'm just saying that, like, that's actually kind of a similar-ish player, you know?
I just see McCall as a much better ball handler than Barnes.
Right, was. No, exactly.
At no time in Barnes' career would I have given him the ball to bring it up court consistently.
Well, and I think that
McCall can do that.
Right, and with McCall, like, I think that his ball handling and his passing are the two things that would really differentiate from
him. I see where you're going. And I think, to Ivan's point, because of his builds, I mean, he's never going to be as strong a defender as Barnes was or is.
But I think Barnes is still wiry, and he just, like, had, like, crazy, like, wiry strength.
Yeah,
which I can attest to the fact that, like, I'm sort of built like that, except, like, much smaller. And, like, I have weird, like, cracker strength. I will take people on.
Oh, boy. We've gone officially off the rails.
No, I'm just saying that, like, you know, there's some people who are stronger than you think they are.
That's true. I just think, to Ivan's point, I'm not sure I'm seeing that in McCall on defense.
Well, yeah.
I don't think that's going to be.
The other thing is for the Barnes comparison is interesting, but, like, so much of what has always made Barnes the player that he is like his craziness, like his
willingness. Right, and McCaw definitely doesn't have that.
Yeah, it's like a violent aggressiveness on the court,
which is also
and off the court, like, unfortunately.
Yeah,
but
which is, for the record, fantastic that McCaw doesn't have that.
Yes.
I really hope that he does not have the career that Matt Barnes has had.
Well, and I think that also funnels its way into other areas of the game. Like, I mean, Barnes makes chancy plays a lot. Like, he makes passes that McCaw isn't already and probably never will, because McCaw is, like, not just tentative, but, like, smarter, you know, he's making better decisions and he's a rookie. Barnes is 37 years old, but that's what made Barnes effective too, right? Like, his kind of unpredictable nature. And he's made a career, like, out of being this gritty guy. I hate the phrase gritty. I wish I hadn't used it.
But so what is, like, I mean, what is the ceiling for McCaw? Like, I mean, we've sort of danced around it.
Jeez, I think that's a tough one.
And this is the type of thing also, by the way, that I'm going to, like, bookmark and then come back to 5 years from now.
These are always hard. Like we goldenstateofmind.com, like every year there's like a there has been in the past like a fan post or two that like try to compare, you know, a play like a player comparables, and they're always so hard and all over the place, and usually there's like weird bias that comes in, like you know, white players are always compared to white players.
Right.
So that all aside, I do want to hear Nate's call, because it sounds like you've got one already.
Well, I don't like what's coming to my mind. I mean, I'm just not gonna say it. But I don't like it.
No, come on, man. You got to say it now.
No, I think it's a tough. I think it's a really tough. I don't know. It's a tough comparison. So the thing is, what I'm struggling to compare is this idea of you have a player who's a pretty solid. He has all around skills on offense. Nothing's great yet. And so we have a player who can handle the ball. He can shoot a little. He can pass a little. He knows where to be on the court, but I mean, not at a, you know, kind of like potentially above replacement level, but nothing like all-star level. And then defense, I think for the reasons Ivan has pointed out, I think he will be an above average defender, but not a great defender. So I'm trying to figure out like where you got a bunch of good skills, but maybe so a jack of all trades, master of none type. And I just don't have a good comp in my head. And the ones that are coming up to my mind, I don't like. So,
yeah, part of me wanted to say Corey Brewer, and not as like a favorable comparison,
yeah.
But like body wise and being able to do a little bit of a lot of things, but like.
Yeah,
you know, I don't really want
so
that.
The one that keeps since you said Corey Brewer. I mean, the one that keeps coming to my mind is Stacey Ogmo.
Oh,
but I mean, and I kind of see that, but I just don't. It, already a polished shooter than Ogmo was. I mean, so I just don't think that makes much sense. Kendall Gill was a player I liked growing up, who was another kind of all around type player. But again, a stronger player, and I think. You know, but that kind of player who can do a lot of different things, and just, you know, Kendall Gill was a player who actually did a lot of things really good. But Kendall Gill's not going to stand out in anybody's mind as like a great player. He once had like 10 steals in a game, which was awesome. But like, and obviously for some reason, don't ask me why I was a fan of Kendall Gill. I just was. So like Kendall Gill, Jimmy Jackson, those are kind of players like when I was growing up that I thought were like awesome because they did a little bit of everything.
The thing I remember most about Kendall Gill was his Cribs episode. You guys ever see that one?
No,
I probably need to. I'm a closet Kendall Gill fan.
I think he was self-proclaimed.
The closet exists no longer. Because you just said it on live podcast.
That's true. Yeah.
I think he was a self-proclaimed metrosexual.
No way.
At the time, at least. If not, like, then that was out there. But, you know, whatever. I don't even know what that means anymore. But he would take them through this, like, obviously, like, lavish mansion. And he had, like a massive collection of, like, body lotions and like, you know, like, bath stuff. It was pretty good. It was... Anyway, that is a tangent about.
But yeah, I mean, I think this Stacey Ogman, Corey Brewer is kind of more like. It's the obvious that comes to mind just because of the build, right?
I mean, right.
Those were
guys that were not drafted in the second. I mean, I don't actually remember about Stacey Ogman, but Corey Brewer is another number 7 pick, I think. I think Stacey Ogman was a top. He was a top 10, right?
I'm pretty sure.
So what about like the shot is totally different, but like a Kevin Martin type, except like way better.
Yeah. I thought about that, but he hasn't
Kevin
really.
Kevin Martin is like a non-playmaker.
Yeah, he hasn't shown any ability to.
I won't accept that. Sorry, Bram.
Or even get to the line, McCaw isn't a guy that's going to try to get to the line that Kevin Martin kind of has been for a long time or was for a long time. But also he was terrible defensively. So they look alike though, body shape wise. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to keep workshopping this. There's gotta be,
I'm going to give you one more because I had to look at basketball reference comps for players. Jalen Rose is definitely a player with a skill set that I would it was his ball handling was clearly ahead of McCaw's.
Who is that?
And McCaw, I think it's Jalen Rose.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah.
His ball handling is clearly better than McCaw's, but I think.
But isn't he bigger than McCaw?
Jalen Rose was. What's that?
Is he bigger than McCaw? Or...
Yeah, he was a bigger guy than McCaw.
Yeah.
But I think this. I think it's a tough skill set to put a finger on. It's a guy that where people always can see a lot of potential, but at a certain point, these players who are all around players always seem to define themselves with any one particular skill or never find that really that one niche. I think Jalen Rose was he's an awesome NBA player. I enjoyed him. I'm a Michigan fan, obviously, so I love Jalen Rose, but
That Jalen Rose finally found his niche in media, actually. So maybe that's the future for McCaw. You never know.
That's unhelpful. That's totally unhelpful.
The other thing here is we're having a hard time remembering these guys because you don't like when somebody's not really, really good at like one thing, then they're just like those utility guys are always there. They're probably there on like every winning team. And it's just kind of hard to even remember.
Exactly. And you could probably go back through and find a ton of guys.
All right. So here's one. Is McCaw's ceiling like a Draymond Green type of thing where he suddenly just starts being really good at a bunch of stuff and it just works for some reason and it doesn't make sense?
Yeah, because Draymond makes zero sense.
Draymond makes no sense. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's the dream that we all have is that, you know, second-round pick, the Warriors brain trust identified somebody that they really loved, and they brought him in, and then they start playing in big minutes, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, top five player in the league.
I mean, I think it's a top five player. I mean, I already said Hall of Famer, so... that's a tough one. I mean, it's hard to know the rookie. I mean, look, Draymond Green's rookie year, no one expected him to be an all-star and future DPOY candidate, perennial. I mean, you just never know. And I think it is about the opportunities you get. Draymond, you know, unfortunately, and David Lee had to get injured before Draymond really got his role.
Well, and so here, KD got injured, and so now, you know, here comes...
Yeah.
Right, so we can trade KD or get rid of him at the end of the season.
Let's trade KD for Kevin Love. That'd be great.
All right,
I've heard two things that require people being banned from this podcast. Because I don't know how to do the technical stuff, so it might be talking on my phone or something, like uploading an MP3. That's fine.
So you could just put your phone number out onto the internet, and people could just call you, and you could like reference them in, and then you'll just talk to them for a while.
And I'm sure that would go really well.
Yeah. Mm. All right, so we're 45 minutes in. Because we already promised this, we should talk about the MVP race a little bit before we close here. It sounds like it's still between among basketball punditry, a pretty strong race between Harden, Westbrook, and Kawhi Leonard, who's been making a strong case recently. So what do you guys think? I mean, there's definitely the little subsection of like basketball Twitter that's like hates the idea that Westbrook is even in that conversation, only because he's supposedly just there because of the triple double number and not really looking at like the other people that are almost having triple doubles and are more effective. All right. But what is this? So okay, Nate, you have strong opinions here.
I mean what he's doing is pretty impressive. It does. I mean, who cares about maybe we shouldn't care about triple doubles. I mean, but what he's doing are things that we don't expect from point guards, right? I mean, so in the that guy plays with a fire, and you see it when you watch OKC. Actually, I mean, that guy he plays with a fire that's contagious. You know you're going to step out on the court, and there's no way you're going to be a teammate that's going to put in more effort than Westbrook. And I think it actually works for that team. Like, you can see the team galvanizing around Westbrook. Now, whether or not they go very far, I mean, that's another question. But, you know, they lost a huge piece, and they scrambled, and they're making it work to be a playoff team. So I think the guy deserves the credit he's getting. I think it's silly to suggest that just because he's getting triple-doubles, that's the only reason he's in there. I think the other knock against him, though, is his efficiency, right? compared to Harden or compared to Kawhi or to compare to as a point guard compared to like a guy like Curry. So I think that was the efficiency piece, the shooting efficiency, scoring efficiency is probably what I'd have. I'd probably knock Westbrook for that compared to the Harden Kawhi.
You know what's...
He deserves to be in that conversation.
And something that's kind of not, maybe not fair when you're comparing Westbrook to Harden in that conversation, and really, you know, just kind of generally, is that Harden's team was built around him.
Yes.
Like his right. GM had time to build a team around to make him, like, hire the coach that was perfect for him, get yep. all these 3-point shooters that like yep. that make his playmaking even more effective. And like, and Westbrook just kind of has this team that was built around Durant to a lesser degree,
right.
perhaps by a lesser GM.
No, but you're absolutely right.
So are you saying that the MVP should be Morey?
I've seen that used as a knock on Harden, and I kind of see that, but he's also had a phenomenal season, right? I mean, you could build a team around Harrison Barnes and
yeah,
he's not gonna put up these numbers. So
we really flirted with burying Harrison podcast.
I just don't understand it. It's like oh man, given any option, like given there's like A, B, C, and then D is Harrison Barnes. It's like always D.
I'd probably say X was Harrison Barnes, but you know.
No, I mean
A, B, C, D,
like,
maybe F. No, F.
Just Harrison like Barnes. Choices of like things that you're gonna talk about, and that's yeah. always. But no, something I was going to say is that I think that the underrated MVP candidate this year is actually LeBron, unfortunately. I think what he's done with that team and the way that he's gotten all those guys to really, like, in the turmoil that happened after all that stuff, like, you know, the fact that he's been year in, year out, that the type of player that he is, I think is unprecedented. We've never seen anything like it. And I really do believe that he should at least, I don't think he should win, but I think that he should deserve more recognition than he's getting. That being said, my MVP voting, if I had a vote, which I most definitely
one
do
day,
not.
One day.
Yeah, no, I'm a little skeptical of that ever happening, but it would be Kawhi number one, LeBron number two, Russ number three, and Harden number four.
Really interesting. Yeah. I'm not comfortable ranking that just yet, but
well, did you see? I don't know if this was true, but I saw some sports writer today say that the MVP votes had to go in today. Like today was the deadline for them.
No,
to vote
that can't
for.
Be true.
It didn't seem like it would be true, but it was. No. It was like Chris Herring or somebody that was you know is very reputable, but maybe it was a fake.
There's no way that can be true.
Well, it doesn't make any sense.
I mean, I can look it up, but
well.
I'll find a middle ground with Bam. I'll give LeBron Executive of the Year. And then we can go with like, I think Harden. I hate to say Harden. I hate watching Harden play basketball. To be honest, it's painful. But this year, I mean, like I said, they're only so. Think about the number of teams that we've really seen recently that have really been able to like build a high caliber team around one player. I mean, it's like, that's part of what makes Allen Iverson so amazing. They built a team around him to complement him like absolutely perfectly. And he got him to the finals.
Yeah.
Like by force of will. I mean, it's so impressive to watch that happen.
Well, and having
by force of will and a really good defense. And they had an outstanding defense that year. But so the idea that should be a knock on Harden. I think there is a general, Harden is still trying to shake his old reputation of those defense YouTube videos. And I think that he's kind of carrying his old reputation with him. But we have to acknowledge that in a vacuum for this season, what Harden is doing is pretty remarkable, no matter what we thought about him before. And, I mean, it's impressive. I mean, yes, they put a team around him, but he's leading the elite in assists. That's crazy. I mean,
and he has an elite skill set that you can build a team around and do that with, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean,
which also imagine if Harden was surrounded by somebody like, you know, Durant or somebody, and then they had just like somebody else that was just this this amazing just force in nature that could just take the ball.
Yeah.
I wish that Durant had been scoring like 35 points a game this year, and then the top three vote getters would be in some order Durant, Harden, and Westbrook. That would have been kind of fun.
I still don't understand that, man. I'm still like, as a basketball fan, like I'm as a Warriors fan, I'm glad that Durant somehow ended up on the Warriors, which I think is still stupefying and amazing, and I'm super into it. But as a basketball fan, it's just like, man, good God, good Lord, what is this nonsense? That's what I think about the Oklahoma City Thunder, man. It's just like what a waste.
All right.
Yeah, I mean they were. Jeez.
Let's call it there. Yeah. We're
I'll follow Ivan's lead on this one.
We're almost on the hour, so let's call it now and get back on the mic. You know, next week, see where the Warriors are at. If you're listening to this podcast in a browser, go ahead and
whoa.
You're going to have to edit this out. My fire alarm is going off.
See, that was your fire alarm, given it was my I'm sorry, my take was too hot.
Oh, God. I was almost there. I almost got out of this thing without going off. Okay, let's call it there. If you're listening to this podcast in a browser, go ahead and subscribe. Like, why aren't you listening to it on your phone or something? Like, you can subscribe in iTunes or Stitcher and probably other places. You can also follow us on Twitter at Unstoppable Baby, of course, and at Bram Kinchelow, at Nate P underscore SBN, and at Ivan BE. We also are on Facebook. Which I think is still a thing that people use, but I don't really know anymore because I'm old. But you can try following us on Facebook if you know how to use it.
It's facebook.com/GoldenStateOfMind. And I just want to say that we are a few followers away from hitting 400,000, which is unprecedented for a team blog. We will be the first NBA basketball team blog to hit 400,000, and like by a large margin. And I'm not even sure. I'm not even sure actually if any of the other team blogs have hit 400,000. So I'm a little bit irrationally.
It's like
my little baby, and so I really care about it. And it's a thing. And you know, right earlier today we were at like 399/5 something something, and I'm actually looking it up now. And I'm going to stall for time, and I'm going to say some words. And
if we're not there yet, listeners, get us over 400,000. We're almost there.
Right, we're at 399,660.
Oh. 399,660. All right.
It's so close. Oh, my God.
We might have
the 400,000th person will get a shout out on the podcast.
The 400,000th person. I'm not sure how I would figure that out, but I will definitely shout you out.
I'm not either, actually.
Oh, yeah. And also, I mean, Brand does a Facebook Live. So if you're not already following our Facebook page, you can watch Brand's beautiful mug, and he'll give you a shout out on Facebook Live too. So
it's definitely
like totally unfiltered. Like, there's no Ivan or Nate.
I tried to do that earlier tonight, actually, and my phone was like running low on battery, and so it decided to stop working. And so I actually made two different Facebook Live videos in which I had some great questions, and then I deleted them both because they got aborted because my phone shut down. So I apologize. All right.
Well, we probably lost some followers there.
Yeah.
We're not always super professional, but, you know, I guess you're listening to this, so we're doing something okay. All right, well, that's it.
Listen, if you made it to the end of the podcast, they understand. They understand, and their hearts is just like, it's a thing that they will forgive us for, and it's a thing that they will forever be in within us as we walk towards the promised land of Golden State.
Say hi to Spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 4/29, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.